Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley, 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. In the studio this afternoon is orthopedic surgeon Dr. Dan Polishuk of Ortho New York. He specializes in adult hip and knee reconstruction, has a specific interest in minimally invasive surgery, including computer navigation and robotic-assisted makoplasty. Dr. Polishuk earned his medical degree from SUNY Downstate Medical Center. He completed his residency at the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey and his fellowship at Columbia University Center for Hip and Knee Replacement. He's an attending orthopedic surgeon at Ellis Hospital and uses minimally invasive techniques in both hip and knee replacement. Dr. Polishuk, welcome to the Vox Pop.
Thank you, Alan.
To be top part of today's conversation, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Hey, doctor, every time I turn around, somebody's telling me about their bad knee. What's going on?
I think nowadays people are a little less willing to wait the 20, 30 years that we used to recommend for people to wait before getting a knee replacement. I see a lot more 30s and 40s coming in saying, you know what? These are the good years. Might as well do it now. Our technology hasn't improved tremendously much more.
Did you say hasn't?
Has not, unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah. So we still struggle with the longevity of hip and knee replacements. But the attitude nowadays is, if I can give you a good 10 years, it's probably better than suffering for another 10 to get that hip and knee replacement when you're in your 50s and 60s.
Do people ever get a second one after they've been?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so the trouble with these, once they wear out, just like a tire on a car, you got to change it. Unfortunately, with a car, you come in, you get a new tire. With a human being, you have to open the knee up and that surgery again. And as we operate over and over, there's scar tissue, there's bone loss. So the successive surgeries are not as successful typically. But yes, there's always a second, third, and sometimes fourth chance at a good knee function.
Well, you know, as we wait for the phone calls, I wanted to ask you a question that has occurred to me lately. A lot of people are on one kind or another of a heart medication or of a, you know, and we're told that some of these basically cause bone loss. Has that been your experience?
Bone loss is a difficult concept to translate to patients sometimes. Bone loss by itself does not cause arthritis per se. It predisposes you to fracture. So if you fall and
right.
As 30 years old, you'd bounce back. As 60 years old, you might break a bone. So although there are many medications that will cause bone loss.
So the statins will cause bone loss?
It's possible, although I'm not a great expert in statins.
Yeah.
A lot of the medications will have such long lists of side effects that you might not want to take them if you read them. Keep in mind, it's better not to have a heart attack and have your bones weaker 20 years later.
Right. Okay, so the other thing you do extensively, obviously, is hip replacement.
Mm-hmm.
Have we learned anything about hips that we didn't know before? There was a great kerfuffle. For a while,
about the
way and the ball and the joint and all like that.
I think you might be referring to our debacle with the metal-on-metal hips. Yes, we've learned that metal-on-metal is not good. Beyond that, we're pretty much back to what we started with in terms of metal ball or ceramic ball and polyethylene liner. We're better at making the hips stable, so there's a little less restraint that we will place on patients at times. There's different ways to approach a hip replacement surgery. So some of the ways are purported to be a little more safe in terms of function afterwards. For the most part, we get the alignment of the components a little better. There's computer navigation. There's makoplasty.
So, we understand what computer navigation is. The computer, while you're operating, will help guide you. Is that right?
The computer navigation is a tool, so it's just like having a ruler to be able to measure out the precise distance between two points. A computer allows us to measure the angles intraoperatively a lot more precisely rather than us eyeballing it. So if I think it's a 40-degree angle on a cup, but in reality it's 45, it'll probably be okay. If it's, in fact, 55, maybe okay. Mm-hmm. So the computer comes in and says it's 43. All right, so it's a lot more precise. Beyond that, multiple studies so far have shown that there's not much more difference than that in terms of clinical outcome.
And what's makoplasty again?
The makoplasty is using an actual robotic arm that is motorized, and it goes according to a plan that I set in motion. And allows us to make much more precise cuts, both for knee and hip. And again, it's a variety of computer navigation, but with an added twist that I don't just know the angle that I want to get and what the angle ends up being. It actually guides the cutting device within a certain parameter so that I wouldn't be outside of those guidelines.
Let's talk to Steve. Okay, Steve, you are on. What do you got for us today, Steve?
Okay, doctor. I'm very glad for the opportunity to speak with you. I am an athletic and healthy 70-year-old, okay? I take no medications, and I'm very active, and yet I seem to have osteoarthritis in my left hip, probably from years of running, playing soccer, and all kinds of great things like that. And what I'm planning on doing right now is to go for a hip replacement in a couple of months. But I wanted to talk about the alternatives to hip replacement. I've already had a series of 3 hyaluronic acid injections. I'm thinking of going for PRP, the platelet-rich plasma injections, and I'm thinking of researching, you know, stem cell injections. But obviously, I would be interested to know what you think about those things in terms of the ability to avoid surgery and yet give me the range of motion and ability without pain to, you know, to not necessarily run like crazy, but at least to be able to go cycling and swimming and, you know.
Okay, we get it. So now we got 3 minutes to answer the question. Go ahead, doctor.
Hey, Steve, thanks for calling in. So Dr. Polishek here. The hip arthritis that you mentioned, and you've had the shots, unfortunately, in terms of all these treatments, including, by the way, the hyaluronic acid, it's not FDA approved, so we don't know the long term of it. What I'll tell you out of my practice is most of that stuff eventually is going to wear out. So as a 70-year-old, you're in a reasonable position to go either way. If you are planning to go for usual stuff, excluding running, so cycling, swimming, walking, hiking, all of that is allowed with a hip replacement. And we got pretty good nowadays to allow you fairly good range of motion afterwards. I mean, we'll limit you the first 6 weeks.
Right.
We'll tell you not to bend beyond the L shape. We'll tell you not to cross your legs. But after 6 weeks or so, depending on the surgeon you're working with, they'll actually tell you, you know what, Steve, you can do whatever you want. You can bend down. You can tie your shoes. So, you know, you're talking to a surgeon, and I'm purporting surgery is great. But it is pretty good. This surgery is about 98% success. So if you are ever trying all these other things, by the way, completely understandable, and there's nothing wrong with you trying it. And if it works, awesome. If it doesn't, we have a backup plan of hip surgery. What I will tell you is, let's say you try one of these RPR injections or stem cells and it doesn't work, I'd probably avoid doing 3 in a row in the hopes that it's going to work, each of them $1,000 or more costly to you, not insurance covered, you know?
Right.
Well, does that answer?
Well, Steve, thank you very much. Very interesting call, Steve. Thanks for making it.
I do appreciate it. Thank you.
Of course.
Okay, I'm going to ask. I got a couple over the internet. I want to go real quickly, see if you can do this in a second or so. Doctors, I broke my elbow in 1989, end of the radius, pulled off where the tendon attaches. had surgery and for work reasons did not receive all of the physical therapy prescribed. I have 10 degrees of loss of motion, can't straighten my right arm, it's getting worse and gets stuck at 45 degrees more often every month or so for a better part of a day. Is this something that could potentially be corrected? It's a workplace injury. Would workers' compensation insurance still cover the correction if found to be medically advisable?
The second part of the question is most likely yes. The workman's compensation should cover this, unless you had something intervening. And the first part of the question, I'm sure there's something to be done anywhere from minor arthroscopic debridement, taking the osteophytes away, to elbow replacement. And details, we'll have to talk about it. Yeah. In the office setting, because it is not as simple as that.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We will be right back. Thank you very much.
Support comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about memberships, grants, and loans, so our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York, locally owned, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating. ApexSolarPower.com for information. The 2015 Saratoga Showcase of Homes, benefiting two charities, Rebuilding Together Saratoga and Habitat for Humanity, weekends through October 4th. SaratogaShowcaseOfHomes.com for tickets. Ellis Medicine, offering treatment for people with chronic back, neck, and headache pain at the Ellis Neuroscience Center, ellismedicine.org. And from Putnam County Tourism, historic sites, farm-to-table dining, kayaking, hiking, biking, and more. Putnam County, where the country begins. Online, visit putnam.org for event calendar.
And we are back with Dr. Polishek. Delighted to have you all here with us today. Let's go to Jim in Malta. Okay, Jim, you're on, Jim.
Good afternoon. Thank you for helping me with this problem I have. I'm 70 years old, and I've been undergoing treatment up until about 6 months ago for about 18 months for pain in my hip at an orthopedic practice. And over that course of time, the pain diagnosis was that it was caused by either arthritis, then it was switched to stenosis, then bursitis, ITB syndrome. I was referred to physical therapy, had 3 MRIs, 7 injections. So my GP referred me to a physiologist, and he said I had a partial tear of my gluteus median. And he had me go for physical therapy, which didn't help. So he said another option was a platelet injection. I'm just wondering what you think about that. My GP didn't think very much of that. And is there another option, a surgical thing that could be done to do this?
Okay, good question.
I used to run, but I can't run anymore, and I can't hike uphill because of the pain.
Good question, Jim. Okay, we'll get an answer for you.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, Jim. Polishek here. So to answer your question shortly, platelet-rich plasma could work just like an injection could have possibly worked just by decreasing inflammation. I doubt it will fix your tear. In terms of surgery, yes, there's absolutely surgery. We can go in and find that torn tendon and fix it. And I've had reasonable success with that. It's not 100%. And besides, it sounds like you started with a bunch of other things, so it's possible that your arthritis will still limit you and still hurt you. So I wouldn't focus exactly on just the tendon. And if I saw the rest of the imaging, for example, I'd be able to advise you better. But always keep in mind that it's not just one thing around a hip and a 70-year-old that may be causing you pain.
Now, will an MRI show arthritis?
Absolutely. MRI will show arthritis. Unfortunately, it'll be a write-up of about 2 pages, and it'll say severe arthritis somewhere, and yet the patient will come in and say, I have a little tear. And yeah. I remind them the tear is there because, you know, you're a little on the older side, and perhaps it was there all along, and just your arthritis is finally catching up to
it. How do we get arthritis? What is it?
So arthritis is a degenerative condition for the most part. You could have post-traumatic arthritis where you had a bad car crash and your cartilage is damaged by that. For the most part, as we get older, we're all going to have arthritis to one degree or another. And the degrees change with family history It changes with how active you were when you were younger. It changes with how heavy you were. So my 300-400 pounders will have early arthritis in their 30s and 40s to the point where their knees look like
they're eating. So what is it? Is it calcium?
It's damage to the actual covering of the bone, which is the cartilage. That's the crunchy stuff on the chicken bone. And when it is destroyed, you start having bone-on-bone arthritis.
Oh, okay. I get it. That's a very good analogy because I like that crunchy stuff. I eat it all the time.
Yeah. Okay. I've had several injections, different parts of my body, and none of it seemed to work.
Right.
They even had me leave the office and go for a run until my hip hurt. Then had me come back in and injected, like, Novocaine in that spot, which did no good.
Well, that's a concerning sign that maybe that's not the spot that really bothers you. You know what I'm saying? Novocaine will knock out a broken bone pain even. So if it didn't knock that pain for you, I would be worried that it might be related to, you mentioned stenosis, maybe something from the back, maybe arthritis.
They've checked that out and they said no.
All right.
Hey, Jim, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Right, thank you.
Trying to get to other people. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Howard in Northampton. Howard, you're on.
Hello, I have a question for the doctor. I have a friend who had a knee replacement, and it didn't work very well. She can't move her knee more than 45 degrees, and she's in constant pain. And I've been suggesting she go in for a revision surgery, but she's afraid to do that. I wonder your thoughts on that. And if you have time, I have a second question, since the previous caller was asking about arthritis. Does this chondroitin material supplements that they sell, does that do any good? Thank you.
All right, Howard, two excellent questions. To answer the first one, 45 degrees, she's in pain because when she tries to sit, you need 90 degrees of sitting. So every move she makes, she's going to be in pain. So it is going to be a very personal decision, and she needs to make it. I wouldn't push anybody into revision. The success rate of revision surgery is less than that of the primary surgery. And the fact that she got stiff is also concerning, particularly if it was not related to implant positioning, which, by the way, can cause some stiffness. So if she said she was fine initially and then gradually got stiffer, it's a concerning sign that maybe even the second surgery is not going to be much better, and we can always make somebody worse, believe it or not. So, you know, depending on what we see in clinical exam and her studies, and we'll check her for infection. If none of that is very obvious, I would actually honestly tell her, listen, I don't know if I can make you better. We can take the scar tissue out, change the spacing, realign the knee, and hope to make it better. But if we find something, let's say she actually had a subacute infection all this time, she needs that treated. So there might be some easy to understand reasons for it. Now, in terms of the second question, all that chondroitin sulfate stuff, the most I can tell you is studies show that it has a slight anti-inflammatory effect. So if you took a Motrin, it'd probably be similar. It seems to be a little safer on the stomach than the prescription medications. So if it helps you, I usually will not say anything about it and allow the patient to take whatever they want to take. If it does not, don't wait 6 months for this to kick in. It probably will not. You're just wasting your money.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Howard. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Right. Let's go to James in Great Barrington, my hometown. Hiya, James.
Hi, Alan. I have a foot and knee issue, but I'll stick with the knee issue. I have bipartite patella, and I had an MRI on it because I was experiencing a lot of stiffness and pain. So if you want, I can read the impression, but I'm just wondering how much the bipartite patella contributes and if there's anything that can be done about that.
So, hey, James, good question. The bipartite patella is a normal finding. We see it in young folks. It's just a way our kneecap forms or fails to form together. So I would say move away from thinking about it that as an issue, unless MRI specifically shows that the connection between the little part and the big part is inflamed. So if that's the case, sure, there's we can do an operation to put a screw through this, just basically to fix it, treat it as a fracture. We can try offloading the kneecap for a little while, so brace, tell you not to run, jog, go up and down the stairs. I would sort of be very cautious to say, oh, my goodness, you have a bipartite patella. You've had it all your life. So if it bothers you now, right, if it bothers you now, maybe there's something else going on, whether early arthritis, another tear, something that could be even in the hip. Don't forget, hip pain sometimes will refer to the knee. So pretending like your MRI was normal, maybe you have a hip problem that just kind of feels like it's in the knee. And if never checked your hip, that might be another avenue to explore before doing something serious about the bipartite.
It's very interesting. Hey, James, thanks a lot. How do you like all those big signs in Great Barrington that they're putting up there?
Yeah, I know. Well, Great Barrington is still one of the best places to live.
It is. I got quoted in a Smithsonian magazine saying that. Thanks a lot. Appreciate
it. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. All right, James.
Let's go to John in Liberty. John in Liberty, you're on.
Thank you. I was just curious about if an effort to diagnose Lyme disease is ever made, you know, by the doctors when people have hip problems, because I just happen to have two friends up here that were diagnosed this summer with Lyme, and they both have hip problems.
Absolutely. Great question, John.
Thank you.
So Lyme disease is one of those things that is sort of a back burner problem, so you don't jump to that as the first conclusion when you see somebody, but absolutely. We're in the somewhat endemic area. We're not in Lyme or in Connecticut, but it's very much possible. I've had people with knee pain, ankle pain, hip pain. I even heard of somebody who got worked up for back pain, and they finally discovered it was Lyme and treated, and pain is gone. So it's easy enough. It's a blood test, you know. Confer with the doc and say, hey, listen, you know, it's been we've been working it up. We don't know what really is causing it. X-rays are looking okay. Maybe it's something else. Can we test me for Lyme, for gout? Gout is another inflammatory condition that can
mask. Have you been tested, John?
I'm sorry?
Have you been tested for Lyme?
Have I?
Yeah.
Yes, as a matter of fact, just last week. But I've suffered from it for 8 years. Mm-hmm. It took several years before I was able to figure out what it was. But, you know, I'm doing well. But I'm just curious because in my case, I kept asking for blood work, and they said everything is normal. And then my friend, fortunately for me, he said that you have to ask specifically for Lyme disease test, you know. And I just was curious why that is, or, you know, it doesn't make sense because that should be one of the first things, in my opinion, to be tested for. You know.
Right. No, I hear you. I know. It's one of those things that we all get taught. Don't forget about the Lyme, and it's a simple thing, and we all get bogged down with what we do. I do arthritis, so first thing I'm going to tell you is, oh, great news, John. You got no arthritis in the hip, and you're going to say, well, it hurts a lot. Oh, okay, let's try physical therapy, MRI. Wow, everything is negative. We don't know. You want to try a cortisone shot. So I hear you, and I get into the same type of entrenched thinking sometimes, and sometimes the patient needs to bring that up. Hey, by the way, I did have a couple of tick bites, and anybody ever mentions that to me, guess what they're getting? They're getting a blood test right away.
Hey, great. John, thank you very much. Appreciate
it. Thank you, gentlemen.
Absolutely.
Okay. Here's one by internet. Hi, doc. Is there such a thing as an ankle replacement?
That's a great question. Absolutely. We have two foot and ankle trained surgeons up in Albany working with us. They're experts of this. I don't do ankle replacements. I have seen and done them in residency, and they do reasonably well. They're not as sure shot as the hip and knee quite yet, but it's an option. It's something to discuss with the doctor as opposed to a fusion.
We heard from a tennis player who happens to work here sometimes, and wanted to know if she has a knee replacement. What's the downtime?
So, first of all, tennis playing. I usually will say no more than doubles after a knee replacement, just because you don't want to have a lot of pounding on these things. They're metal and plastic, so they will wear out on you. And the more you wear on them, the faster they'll go. Downtime can be for regular activities. Let's say you're a sedentary type of job, as short as a month. You could be back to work doing that. Construction work, I usually say 3 months. And it's sort of very personalized. If I see somebody walking in at 2 weeks to get checked out without a cane already, and they're getting great range of motion. A physical therapist is saying, Polishek did another great knee. Sure, we'll move you along faster. Got to put a little something for myself, right?
Yes, you do.
And then if somebody comes in and they're on a walker, they're barely moving, of course, it's going to be different, and we keep working with them until they're better.
But knees are tough, and sometimes you see knees go wrong, don't you?
Correct. So knees, I usually will say 95% success rate. You might have 9 people in the room, and they're quiet, and they're not hurting. You don't even know they have them. You have one person who had a bad one. They'll be very vocal about it.
Indeed.
So that's what people usually, but I hear about.
But not
about
Polishek.
Yeah,
okay. So let's
modesty, right?
So let's go to Mickey in Albany. Okay, Mickey, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, fellows. Dr. Polishek, I don't understand this. I've had severe hip pain for years, which has finally been diagnosed as being related to my spinal stenosis, and it really hinders my walking. But when I walk with a shopping cart in the supermarket, I'm fairly comfortable, and I've just purchased walking poles, which seem to also... Why is that?
Hey, Mickey, this is an excellent question. It's fortunately for you, it's textbook. This is related to the position of the low back, and when you bend forward, it opens up the space just enough for you to feel better. So if you wanted to take something, try cycling. You might be an excellent cycler. You're leaning forward. You can go for miles, and yet going down the hill, you can't do because you're trying to lean back as you do that. Up the hill easier, down the hill worse. So shopping cart is it's in the textbooks, literally. Like, ask the question, is the patient better with a shopping cart? So bike is going to be your exercise for that. Now, the spinal stenosis question really is, particularly if you're getting worse, you should probably get checked out with a spine surgeon. If you're in good health, they can help you, because as we get older, the surgeries are pretty involved. You don't want to kind of miss the opportunity, and it can be progressive, unfortunately.
Now, you guys do spine surgery at Ortho New York?
Yes, we do.
I would rather be wheeled around in a shopping cart.
There you go. Well, try the bike.
Well, buy a shopping cart.
Okay, buy a shopping cart and a bike. Thank you very much.
Bye. Absolutely, Mickey.
So long, Mickey.
Bye.
Okay, 1-800-348-2551. And now somebody from your hometown, Susan from New Paltz. Okay, Susan from New Paltz for Dr. Polishek. Go ahead, Susan.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I had 2 hip replacements 15 years ago, and then 3 years ago, some osteolysis showed up in my MRI, and the doctor suggested I have a hip revision, sort of as a preemptive strike. I wasn't having any pain. Now, the other one I was told I needed done, but then I went and had a second opinion, and they said I really didn't need it because the osteolysis wasn't that bad.
Okay, what's whoa. Just hold on a second. I'm going to ask doctor a question. Doctor, as the nurse always says, doctor will see you now. So, doctor, I have a question. There's only one. So my question for you is this. What is this term, osteolysis?
So Susan is mentioning osteolysis is fairly common with hip replacement. It is related to the little debris that happens as the plastic of the hip or metal of the hip is wearing out, and it actually gets deposited in the local tissues, and your body responds to it. So the response is always the same: foreign material, I'm going to eat it up. So it starts throwing enzymes at it, trying to destroy plastic and metal. Obviously, we're not that good at doing that. So the surrounding tissue suffers, which is usually bone, and it basically slowly gets eaten away. So on x-rays, it'll look as if you have a hole right above where your hip replacement is, where it shouldn't be. And the worry there is if enough of that happens, the hip cannot be supported anymore by your bone, so you misstep. And now you have a fracture through that, the hip is unstable, and you have an emergency surgery. So we usually will look at the x-rays, and particularly if there's symptoms, we will advise the patient to plan on this, maybe next 6 months, a year, to come in, have a smaller operation where we just change the plastic, maybe put a little bone graft behind the cup, let everything heal up so you avoid that catastrophic failure where you are laid up, it's emergency, it might be Saturday, and you're getting maybe not the prime team doing this, maybe even not a hip expert coming in doing this. This way you can sort of control the situation. But you're absolutely right. If you're asymptomatic, there's no emergency about this. But that's osteolysis.
So, Susan, is that okay?
Well, yes, but I was just wondering, the second surgeon said that okay, let me just say this. After you have a revision, it's never as good as the first time. And I'm sort of sorry that I had it so soon, because another surgeon told me I didn't need it on the second hip yet. He told me to wait. And I've waited a year, and now he looked at me again, and I'm waiting another year. So I was just wondering, when is the best time to do this?
This is a great question. It's a very tough question. It's mm-hmm. not really a very great time to go in for surgery when it doesn't hurt.
The
gestalt of this, or the idea, is mm-hmm. you don't want to miss the boat and step off tiniest of steps, and next thing you know, you have severe hip pain. And that's where the judgment of the doctor comes in. If they look at the x-rays today compared to 2, 3, 6 months to a year, and now it's worse, they're going to say, listen, it's getting worse. Let's do this before something bad happens.
Okay. Susan, we got to let you go. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, look, folks, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. The phones are all ringing. It's one free phone, and we'll be right back with Dr. Polishuk.
Support comes from Bassett Healthcare Network, providing healthcare services across central New York. We see people, not patients. Bassett.org. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. The Urological Institute Urologic Oncology Services, prostate cancer specialists providing comprehensive care for all stages of prostate cancer, featuring 3D diagnostic imaging and advanced robotics. UrologyOncology.com. Mango Tree Imports, Saratoga Springs, New York, announcing their new location in the Saratoga Marketplace at 454 Broadway. Open 7 days a week. MangoTreeImports.com. And from Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, BoydenandPerrin.com.
And we are back. Now, look, folks, all the phones are ringing. I have been severely criticized over the years for trying to move people along. So the general rule is that I want to get everybody in. You understand that. So keep it short if you can, number one. We'll do our best. And for those of you who are offended, I am so sorry. Okay, let's go to David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. And yes, keep moving it along. doctor, I have a hip replacement that's 12 years old, and it's fabulous. I mean, it's 100%. I was just wondering, when they go to replace the plastic washer, is that like arthroscopic surgery, or is it full operation?
It's an excellent question, David. Just imagine we're trying to change your motor in the car, so can I just crank the hood a little bit? Probably not. So I got to get the same exposure as the first time. The only upside to that is I do not have to machine your bones anymore. The metal pieces typically will stay the same. So I get in there, same incision, unfortunately, same dissection. So we get down there. We need to see what we need to see. We need to pull the old stuff out, put new stuff in. And unfortunately, that's a full operation. And that's what the previous caller was referring to. Susan, that second one typically is not the same as the first one, and the reason for that is you're going through the scar tissue. Most folks are older when they have the second operation, and yeah, it's typically not the same, but you got to do what you got to do.
David, thank you very much. Now, how does David know when it's time for the next one?
Pain, and oh, pain. If the doctor says, geez, your osteolysis, where we talked about the bone loss, is so severe that I'm worried you're going to sneeze and it's going to fall apart.
I should get an x-ray, maybe.
Correct. So we usually will say follow up with your doc anywhere from every 2 to 5 years to get those x-rays as a surveillance.
David, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Excellent question. Okay, and Mike in Hudson. Okay, Mike in Hudson, go.
Hi, doctors. I'm calling because I have a flare-up of gout in my ankle. It actually lasted about 6 weeks at this point. Not fully, you know, it's not super painful for 6 weeks. It kind of dulls down, and then it comes back in full. I'm probably going to be starting allopurinol once this flare-up is over. The last couple of times I've used prednisone, a course of prednisone to get rid of it. That seems to be less effective as time goes on. I'm wondering if there's anything else I can take for that. Oh, by the way, I'm also a kidney transplant recipient, so there's a few limitations on what I can take.
This is Alan. Don't eat shrimp and asparagus.
But yes, well, anything that tastes good is off the menu, I guess. But
Mike. Listen, you're in tough bind. Everybody with gout is kind of suffering because their body cannot get rid of uric acid in their body. So allopurinol is a good one. Prednisone just decreases the inflammation, and my guess is they're giving it to you because you're a kidney transplant patient, and otherwise they'd give you colchicine or Advil, Aleve, any of the anti-inflammatories. I wish there was a great answer to this. It's more of a medical condition than orthopedic, so that we don't do a replacement for gout. We don't do surgery for gout. And unfortunately, it's probably going to be a combination of weight control, diet control, and on and off you're going to have these flare-ups. And I don't know if anybody is coming up with anything else new about this. It's an old type of disease, but there's a lot of people suffering.
Old is right. Mad King George had it, George III.
Yeah, at the very least, disease of Victorian kings. Well, right. Well, thanks very much, Doctor.
Absolutely, Mike. Good luck.
Bye now.
Okay, let's go to Nancy in Schenectady. Okay, Nancy, you're on.
Hi. I have a number of people I've been talking to lately who have eliminated gluten foods with gluten from, and they said that the joint pain they were having has gone away. Is this something that's...
It's a great question, Nancy. I heard about that. I'm not sure if I know any studies talking about this, but yeah, several of my patients mentioned it. My advice would be to try it. Nothing wrong with trying it. Nowadays, they have a lot of gluten products that you're not going to feel that like you're really suffering with this. And if you are, in fact, better, by all means, it's the least invasive, least side effect way to get rid of joint pain.
Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, now we'll go to Maureen in Hudson Falls. Maureen, you're on.
Hello, Doctor. Thank you for my call. I am curious. When I was 16, I had an accident on a horse, caught my tall leather boot on a spike, and dislocated my knee. My foot was actually facing backward. And because we were riding somewhere where we weren't supposed to be, afraid to tell our mothers that we'd been hurt or I'd been hurt. So I went all my life without really doing anything about this knee injury. And, you know, I suffered, but I suffered in silence. I got married, you know, 10 years later, and every once in a while I'd be turning over in bed at night and my knee would dislocate. And or I'd be stepping off a step or something and it would dislocate and I'd fall down. But I dealt with it and... you know, I was okay, but I'm now 68, and in the last month or so, I've been having some problem with that knee, where I'm standing, and if I'm standing and my leg is straight, it's fine, but if I go to sit and, you know, or bend my knee, it's excruciating, and it feels like it does not want to bend.
Maureen will answer the question. Doctor?
Okay.
Yeah, Maureen, I got, I think, enough to say to you that at 68, for having this since 16 years old, you got arthritis by definition. Just our joints are not designed to be popping in and out. So from that standpoint, probably a quick x-ray will diagnose a lot of that, and that's probably why you're feeling this new pain that just doesn't go away. Stiffness is very common with arthritis. It's a little concerning that you're dislocating this all the time. And, you know, at 68, we're probably not going to go in and repair any ligaments or tendons. We would likely talk to you about initially non-operative treatment like bracing, physical therapy, etc., and then followed by knee replacement. There's a lot that the knee replacement can substitute for. Not sure in your case if it's going to be a straightforward one that anybody else would get, but there's other ones that we do for people with damage to ligaments. So there are definitely options, and at 68, you're a prime candidate to get this under control and just have next 10 years without any sort of issues, or 15 years, maybe even longer.
And I take it you're staying off the horses, Marie?
Well, I had a bad fall recently, and I can't ride my horse anymore. So
okay. Maureen, okay. A bad attempt at humor on my part. Thank you very much. I apologize.
No, thank you, Alan.
Yeah, right, great question, Maureen.
All right. And now we're going to go. Is that number three up there? I think so. Number three, Rick from Amsterdam. Go, Rick.
Doctor, is there any association between orthopedic surgery and return to rapid AFib?
So, okay, yeah, no, okay, AFib.
I see what you're saying. So having an operation and getting AFib, I'm pretty sure that any sort of an aesthetic experience that you're having may do that to you, including just not even having anesthesia. I mean, any sort of effort. I would talk to a cardiologist about that more so than me. You know, what is that joke about two orthopedic surgeons looking at the EKG? Double-blind study, right? So I'm going to leave the cardiology stuff to the cardiologists, and it's possible. That's all I'm going to tell you. I've seen people go in okay and under control, and then they come out, and we have little issues post-operatively for a while, and we get them under control.
That's a pretty funny joke.
Double-blind.
I got it finally. Thank you very much.
Good question, Rick.
Okay, let's go to Lisa in Albany. Lisa in Albany. We got little time. If somebody else wants to make a call, 1-800-348-2551. Go, Lisa. You're on.
Yes, I had a question regarding my husband had an injury a year ago. He was operated for meniscus was removed, and he has an injury. ACL was torn, and he missed two ligaments, the lateral ligaments. And I was wondering if he doesn't want to have a knee replaced. Can he have the meniscus replaced and the ligaments also restored?
It's a great question, Lisa. The question becomes not whether we can. Yeah, we can. The problem is if it's going to be extensive rehab and the outcome is questionable, if he was 23 years old, we'd pull all the stops and we'll do it because he's got years and years to go. If you're talking about somebody, I'm presuming here, just tell me, is he in the 50s, 60s, 40s? 50s. So in somebody who is in 50s, I think it's a much more sure, straightforward shot to replace the knee. And I know he doesn't want to do it, but I'm not sure if he's going to get a lot more longevity on replacing a ligament, a meniscus, and with a torn ACL previously. The studies are coming out now. People are trying the meniscus reconstruction and replacement. They seem to be, as longevity-wise goes, maybe 10, 15 years, so not any better or worse than a knee replacement. But then he's got all these other issues, so it might not be a very sure outcome. And then he's going to have another operation, and guess what that's going to be, most likely. That's going to be a knee replacement. So he's going to end up with the same thing a year down the line, suffering and risk for surgery.
Okay, Lisa, thank you. Okay, and we'll go to now Andrew in Albany. Andrew, you're on.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about a little bit about scoliosis and the neck. I was diagnosed not too long ago with just kind of minor lower back scoliosis. And on my mother's side, my grandfather and mother have history of a lot of neck pain and issues, and I don't have any pain now, but I'm wondering if you have any advice as I age to help prevent those issues from getting worse, if they would get worse. I know you do surgeries, but if you have any advice, that would be great.
Hey, Andrew, great question. The scoliosis is still, you know, we're still working our way through it, trying to figure out what we can and cannot do. I don't believe there's any particular bracing for the neck. And besides, I would have to know the degree of the curve. So for bigger curves, we know the natural progression is to get worse. And those are the ones we would fuse. And there's your surgery. For smaller curves, we usually say nothing, do nothing, and eventually it'll probably bother you like anybody else in your family simply because your mechanics are slightly off. But if you trade off surgery now versus surgery later, which may or may not happen, it's almost almost like, you know, play the lottery here and see how you do, particularly if you're asymptomatic now.
So when you say fuse, and you got scoliosis, which a lot of people have, what does the fusion do?
So the fusion prevents you from getting worse, but it also
Does it straighten the curve?
Correct. So there's different ways of addressing, and depends on the curve size. So if it's a very severe curve, we'll try to correct it, but maybe partially. If it's not that bad, we can actually straighten you out fairly well. You lose all motion in those segments because it's fused now. There's titanium rods connecting them.
Okay, thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Okay. Absolutely.
Let's go to Tom in Rosendale. Tom, make it fast.
Okay, about 35 years ago, I ruptured an Achilles tendon, and I didn't have it operated on. I just had it put in a cast.
Uh-huh.
And so I've got sort of a weak leg, an atrophied calf, and I'm wondering, at this late stage, can anything be done to sort of help that so I can have a relatively normal leg at this point?
Except for physical therapy, Tom, probably not. The problem with the tendon, if it's not fixed within about 6 weeks, it gets scarred down wherever it is, and it's going to be what it's going to be. It's actually going to not work if they try to fix it.
Okay.
And now I need a hip replacement, and I'm thinking, why bother if I'm just going to get back to this sort of, like, you know, gamey leg that I've got in the first place?
Well, it takes the pain away. You know, hip replacement is for pain control. So you might not be faster, might not be able to bend more, but the pain is going to be gone in the hip.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Absolutely,
thank you very
Tom.
Much, Tom. Okay. And let's see. Can we squeeze in one real fast one? Maybe. Okay. Eliza, I'm so sorry. It's got to be really fast. What do you got?
Okay. I had a sudden onset of severe joint pain in both shoulders in early July and a little bit in the back of my legs, and it's gone undiagnosed ever since then, and I've been to PT and I've had a bunch of tests, but everything's negative. It's particularly bad at night when I'm sleeping. I wake up if I ever move, and with the pressure on the joints, with sharp pain in both shoulders pretty much all night.
Yeah, they tested you for Lyme from our previous caller, and the MRI was negative, positive.
They never did an MRI yet.
That's probably the next step, really, to look in depth and see if you have some sort of partial injury.
I'm so sorry, Eliza. We are out of time.
Okay.
I want to apologize to Brian and Julie, who we don't have time for today, Brian in Albany and Julie in Queensbury. We are out of time. Thank you, Dr. Dan Polishuk. You're great from Ortho New York for joining us today. Support for Medical Monday comes from Nathan Littower Hospital, Gloversville, New York, now offering new MRI technology with silent MRI scans and feet-first exams, NLH.org. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. On tomorrow's program, it's an open forum. Stay tuned now for a news update.